Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 313. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Harrison Milfeld.
What's up?
And Holly Velmuth.
Hi, everyone.
Tonight, we have a familiar three-part structure for yourselves. We're going to start off with what we've been playing, move on to the Nintendo news, and our final feature for tonight is the best and worst E3 moments. So, what we've been playing, I assume we've all picked up the recently released Mario Kart 8.
Did we pick it up? Wait, I wasn't sure that was the title that we were picking up this week. I thought we were all settled on Kirby Triple Deluxe. I'm still late on that one.
So how is Triple Deluxe then?
I haven't picked it up. I'm joshing everybody.
Yeah. So yeah, I believe we all have picked up Mario Kart 8. So how are you all finding it? What's our kind of initial impressions here?
Wow. What could I say? That's really cliche to say. Start that way.
I'll say right off the bat that I was very impressed with the graphics. Just, you know, turning it on. I know I heard a lot about it. It was going to be a pretty game.
It is quite a pretty racer. I mean, everything what Nintendo does, even though it's not the running on the best of hardware, to be exact, but just what Nintendo has actually churned out of it, even though they admitted that they could still pump out more polygons, it seems like, with that console. But, yeah, that's one thing that just blew me away off to there, was just, like, you know, just colors, everything popping up. I mean, I thought Mario 3D World and DKC Tropical Freeze actually did that, but this one, you're just like, I don't know, I guess it's just better once you see it in full 3D space as opposed to just a fixed angle what we've seen with Donkey Kong and Mario World.
Yeah, definitely. Holly, what are your kind of like first impressions of 8?
My first impressions honestly weren't super good. I don't know why. I just thought it was kind of boring, but you know, I just started with 50cc because I wanted to try and unlock as many characters as possible, as soon as possible, because I'm actually having a big old get-together with the game. But so I was on 50cc, I just started with the first cup, and it just, you know, felt like it moved so slow. I was like, okay, this is great. I mean, I thought the graphics were amazing and everything, but it just felt really kind of boring, not super exhilarating. But seriously, with every single race that went by, I loved the game more and more. And I, oh my gosh, by the time I was done with, you know, like the Rainbow Road for Mario Kart 8, the, you know, brand new Rainbow Road, I was just like, wow. Wow. I mean, the anti-gravity stuff is mind-blowing. I mean, it just, you know, you have to watch out for, I don't know, sometimes you're just gawking at the surroundings. Like, Mario Circuit, I believe it's called, has some really neat kind of upside-down moments. And if you're, you know, staring at the scenery, you might just get a little distracted and mess up in the race or whatever. It's so hard just not to look and watch how, you know, just neat this game is. It's amazing.
What seemed like an eternity for me the day when it was released, because I was at work all day, so as I'm checking Twitter, everybody's like, join this tournament right now, and I'm just sitting at work going, can time go by faster right now so I can go pick this up? So, and what seemed like, you know, and I got it, rushed home, and I made the my whole idea was like, okay, I'm not going to jump in line, I want to unlock all the courses right now, and I jumped into 150cc, you know, just balls deep into it, and, let's just say I got through whatever, and after about few third and fourth place finishes, I just kind of said to myself, maybe I should try this on the easiest difficulty to know the tracks, and then I master it. So, I think I only have one more cup to go on it, whatever. I just, I fell asleep, and not to say it was boring, it just, I fell asleep, whatever, while trying to play it. You fill in the blanks there.
I actually had a similar experience with work. I actually had to drive an hour to get to the GameStop where I pre-ordered it. So I picked up my copy, drove an hour back home, and then I only got like an hour and a half with the game before I had to go to work. And all during work, I was just like, oh, must get home, must play Mario Kart.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, everybody was asking me, like, the night once it released at midnight, you know, what's your Nintendo Network ID, get on there, whatever. I mean, it just, it seemed like, you know, once this game came out, it was the type of game that you really wanted to bring everybody together. It, like, you know, as far as Wii U owners, even though it's 200 of us. I kid with that. But, it's a, I mean, the few things to get for it and the few things to take away from it, I mean, well, first, the good is that it controls well. I mean, that should be no surprise right now. Many Mario Kart titles out there control well, and I feel like it controls well, especially on the gamepad. I haven't tried it on anything in the Pro, or even went back to just steering only with a Wiimote. Anti-gravity motion on there, which I thought was going to be a gimmick at first, works pretty well, but, like, works really well as far as to advantage once you're trying to, once you get into those 150cc cords, because, as everybody knows with the anti-gravity movement on there, is that if you bump into somebody, it gives you the extra boost, and whereas somebody bumps into you, it gives them, and vice versa. Course design for the first, like, the new 16 ones, I mean, it's hard for me to decide what's a favorite right now, just because I've gone through it all once, I need to go back to it again, and, I mean, but one takeaway I could probably give with it is character selection, because I feel like there's quite a few characters from past Mario Kart games that people liked should have been brought back. I feel like there's just too much of an overabundance of baby characters and metal and gold metal Peach or whatever you want to call it. And the one thing I really did not like about it, though, as far as the retro tracks, is the N64 Rainbow Road is condensed. It's not one full track. It's basically, and I learned this, it came up to me as a surprise, is that you're on the course, you race, and I keep noticing as I'm going past whatever, like, these other, like, you know, finish lines, or, like, lap sections on here. I'm like, wait, this wasn't the beginning of the course, and it said 2 and 3, and then once I got to the end, it was the beginning of the course. But it felt like, you know, basically that long course that we all remember from, long Rainbow Road course from N64 has been condensed. So it's not one long, like, three laps. It's one lap with three sections there to finish up. That's what I felt disappointed about that track.
Yeah, I guess on the other side of the coin for that is because we do have the new Rainbow Road on the Special Cup, which is a pretty awesome track in itself. So I don't feel too bad that the 64 one's kind of been cut off into, you know, different segments opposed to different laps. Well, to be fair, I mean that's if you go back to the 64 Rainbow Road, it takes a long time to.
I mean,
on the free laps.
It's not short for me once you know that, like, the, well,
oh, well, you can you fall off and...
Oh, like, the shortcuts, which, oh, boy, just so much cheating goes on in that game, and so many friendships almost ended because of it.
But it should be interesting to see how kind of robust the shortcuts are in the tracks in this game, especially with, like, the, just the emphasis on the online mode.
Speaking of online, has anybody ever tried online right now? I mean, I got into that, whatever, after I unlocked a few tracks, and I realized I was out of my league a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I've got a good tale here. Well, I put my name down for the Infendo-endorsed Mario Kart 8 tournament, which was run by longtime reader of the site, Mike is a Poet, who was running it through his Facebook page. And I got to the final bracket, I believe it was. And kind of my highlight of the entire thing was coming first on a single race on the tournament itself. But beyond that, I was performing pretty badly. But it was really fun just to go for it. And although we weren't using the actual tournament mode, just because Mike wasn't aware exactly how that would work, you know, before having the game. So we were doing just meeting up in kind of friend matches. And just kind of arranging things on Facebook in between. But no, it was awesome to do. And in the end, Mike himself won his own tournament. but no, it was fun. And although you can't voice chat during the matches itself, it performs perfectly well kind of in the lobbies. And you can kind of just kind of discuss what happens and, you know, what to do next. It works pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, you can't custom make your own little messages in the beginning when everybody's in the waiting room. It's just like a set motion, like, oh, I could have had that, or I'm so mad. And it's really a bunch of cheesy responses on there. And,
it's quite cute, though.
I don't know. I have a, if it's with friends, I wish they could give you that option. Unless I haven't checked it out. Unless it's friends, you can have the option on there to write basically your own custom messages. Because I don't know. I feel like in a Mario Kart tournament with Nintendo readers or friend like writers here as well, I could get quite competitive though when it comes to it. Even though I have not won a race in online yet. I mean, the closest I've gotten has been finishing fourth. And then there was a time I was in second and then got hit with a red shell, another red shell, and back to seventh, and shame.
So, you know, I've definitely been doing some extra practice since kind of seeing what the competition is like out there, and in my odd defense here. I mean, I guess we're all in the same boat. I mean, we've all only just picked up the game, but I guess it varies depending on where you are in the world, of if you've had it for a couple of days or if you... For me, I only had it for a couple of hours before I jumped in, as it were. But I am very much looking forward to kind of future tournaments, and I reckon this is going to be pretty robust multiplayer-wise going forwards. I'm hoping it's going to have the legs and the community kind of hangs around with it, and I don't see why not.
I think that's the one thing with, like, tournament-wise. I mean, you can't message people through Miiverse or on, like, messages to join a tournament. You have to kind of go through other forms of media to tell everybody that's like, oh, this is a tournament going on there. That's a bit of an annoyance. I could see with the setup there. I mean, I feel like if you could get like something through Miiverse, like, hey, you're invited to this tournament that's on so and so, I feel like that would just embrace more to actually get into it. I mean, not to say that Mario Kart embraces tournament wise things like this. It's a simple convenience. I wish it was implemented.
No, I totally agree, and you know, you never know, we might have some sort of OS update further down the road which enables, like Mario Kart 7 does, where you can invite people not playing the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's possible. I mean, Pikmin 3 did get that update too, so, I mean, for, what was it, for stylus control just this past week?
Yeah, that was an odd one. I did actually, I'll finish with the Mario Talk here, and then I'll jump into that, because I did have a little go on that. So, another big component of 8... is Mario Kart TV, as it were. Have we had a little play with that yet, in terms of either just creating the custom cinematics afterwards, or just viewing them? Are we watching these, or just going to the next race each time?
I saw Holly posted a video on Miiverse, and I had to ask, does this get posted to your YouTube account, your own one, or is it through the YouTube community that Nintendo has licensed through Mario Kart?
It actually gets published on your YouTube channel. I think that you can, like, you obviously have to have a Google account, that is, to do that, but I believe that if you don't have a Google account, you can also just post it to Miiverse as a just Miiverse only video. But
yeah,
posting to YouTube was surprisingly you know, quick and efficient, and I will probably be using that fairly frequently, much to the dismay of my brother who plays Final Fantasy Online. But yeah, it works quite well. I think you can even... I haven't actually tried putting together a highlight reel that shows the entire race. That's one of the customization options that you can choose, is the amount of time. You can go from 30 seconds to 45 seconds to 60 seconds to the whole race. And that's something I haven't even... I mean, obviously, I haven't tried putting it on YouTube, but I haven't even tried looking at a full race of highlight reels. But highlight reels are really cool. You can kind of select up to 4 characters to focus on. You can choose what kind of action it focuses on. You can choose to focus on items, on drifting, on action itself, on everything. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And also, as you're watching the highlight reel, you can, you know, fast forward, you can rewind, you can go in slow motion in either direction. You can go slow motion backwards, so that's cool.
The slow motion, I've been slow-moing every one of my races on there. Just to kind of see the detail in the racers, which pretty darn well for, like, you know, for a Mario Kart racer, which, I mean, they're not, like, characters in past games weren't really much to look at, but this one, you're just kind of looking at the small little details that they have, even though, like, it's Mario's mustache or the expressions on each of the racers' faces, how deep it goes. It just, but yeah, slow-mo is, it's a fun little tool on there when you look, try to edit videos for Mario Kart TV.
And that's how you can see who does the coolest tricks, too. I think all the characters have fairly unique sets of tricks that they can do when you pull off tricks off of jumps. And I was just noticing that and doing some slow-mo with Waluigi of all characters. I thought his tricks were really, really cool looking. Him and, actually, I think that's about it. I can't think of anyone else who has cooler tricks than Waluigi at this point. I haven't tried a lot of different characters, but yeah, I really love the personality that the characters have in this game. It's a good thing. Can't be a bad thing when the characters have personality.
Yeah, definitely. I think thoroughly enjoying it. Eight, and I assume we're going to be playing this online for quite some time. We've not had it for long, but it's definitely kind of Mario Kart at its best, at least for me.
It'll probably be better for me once I come up with a good kart and rider combination, because I've been experimenting like crazy to try and find out what works and what doesn't work for me. And I think once I find that perfect combination, I will actually be able to beat Mike as a poet. I was actually playing him just before the podcast, and I did get first place a couple of times, which I was happy about, but he generally would beat me. So look out, people. I'm going to find that combination, and I'm going to be unstoppable. So yeah, there.
Seems like Holly's out for vengeance right now.
I am. I mean, it was just before the podcast, and so I'm kind of still a little overexcited about that.
Which is kind of 2/3 of the podcast is out for vengeance against Mike here. You just got Mike, your turn now, Harrison.
Yeah.
Be prepared. Oh, boy.
You got to fight for the team.
I got to take one for the team. That's basically, it's like, well, you, it's like, hey, it's like, I don't want to lose to him. It's like, fine, I'll lose to him.
Infendo versus Mike. The race of a lifetime.
Well, there are team matches.
Yeah.
I think we'll leave it on that note. I did mention very briefly that I did download the update to Pikmin 3. This came out of nowhere. I can't fathom the reasoning for this. I'm not to say that I'm ungrateful, but they've added a new control scheme to Pikmin 3 via a download. It's kind of more similar to how you play that Pikmin game in Nintendo Land. And so it basically brings stylus controls to Pikmin 3. And you can flick your Pikmin on the touchscreen. But it also kind of works as just one giant trackpad. And so you can kind of walk around with the analog stick. And then kind of set the power of your like throwing arm, as it were, by kind of sliding on the touchscreen. And so it does give you that kind of greater level of control, more like how the Wii Remote does, and you can kind of point on the screen. It's kind of replicating that, but using your finger on the touchscreen. And so, yeah, it's a much more accurate way to play the game, using the gamepad at least. It takes a little while longer to get your head around it, because you're kind of, it's almost like, you know, patting your head and rubbing your belly at the same time. It's not the easiest thing to, you know, just to get your head around at first. But now, when it clicks, it's surprisingly well implemented. But I've just got this thing in the back of my mind wondering, why is Nintendo spending their time adding control options to Pikmin 3? I don't understand it.
I don't know. I guess probably since it's one of the available games for download for when you get Mario Kart 8. I guess to add another control option. And speaking of the Club Nintendo update, did everybody notice that all the servers were crowded the day of the release of Mario Kart 8 from Club Nintendo, and nobody could actually, put in their codes? And I've heard horror stories of some people who've inputted their codes, or tried to input their codes again, saying that it was already claimed.
Well, I think I got away quite safely on that one, because I don't think it affected the UK site. I kind of got in and out with my code.
I still can't even get on. I think I registered Mario Kart 8 successfully, but after I did that, I think you're supposed to go to your to-do list to see, get your download code for your free game. And I went to my to-do list after registering Mario Kart 8, and it was just wiped out. I mean, I should have at least 10 things on there. I have tons of, intent to buy games that I have not actually bought, but I just figure I should take the surveys anyway in case I ever buy them. And, you know, just nothing on there. And now when I go to Club Nintendo, I get a sorry, we're under maintenance message. And so, yeah, I've still been unsuccessful with that. How about you, Harrison?
I'm waiting on that because we have until July 31st, I believe, to put the codes in and claim the download for one of the available titles, free titles to choose from. But, you know, everybody's complaining about the servers being crashed on there. My thoughts, why not just play the game Mario Kart 8 first? I mean, I understand there's probably some new Wii U owners who picked up the bundle and they want to do that, but it's just like, you know, patience. Come on.
I feel like it can wait, too, so I'm not in any huge rush.
All right. In the end, I just got a... because the only game I didn't own, I know I brought this up in the last show, was Mario Sonic at the Olympics. And I did a bit of further research into it, and it didn't persuade me to pick that. And so I've just got a digital copy of Nintendo Land installed on my Wii U. Just to save the hassle of putting the disc in. but yeah, that's what my bonus went towards. I've got a nice little icon now. And I think on that note as well, we'll move on now to our Nintendo news. And for this week's show, it is a Smash edition. It is all around the Super Smash Bros. Invitational, which happens on Tuesday, June the 10th. And Nintendo released a load of new information about this. And so the tournament itself is going to be between 4 and 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's obviously physically happening at the Nokia Theatre, and there's going to be the first come 3,000 guests which are going to be joining, but we can also watch it live via Twitch. And I think it's cool that they're offering up via Twitch, because their usual streaming service isn't always the best.
Isn't it kind of odd that, you know, you could watch the Smash Brothers tournament through like an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 or like PlayStation 3 or 4 just because of this?
Oh yeah, but not the Wii U. That's a very good point. Yeah, they both have Twitch support where the Wii U doesn't. You never know, maybe that'll be something they'll be announcing at E3. Twitch support for the Wii U. You never know.
Oh, hopefully.
And so, yeah, they've announced the participants. And if you've ever watched a documentary called The Smash Brothers, you'll probably have noticed or recognised a couple of the names which popped up here. And for any listeners of the show here which haven't heard or seen that documentary, I'd recommend it. It's available for free on YouTube. Just search The Smash Brothers and you'll find a really cool documentary about some really hardcore Smash Bros. Melee players. It's definitely worth a watch. And if you watch that as well before the live show June 10th, it will probably make watching the live event even more better, knowing some of the people which are involved. And yeah, before I go on, have either of you seen this documentary?
No.
And how are you, Harrison?
Wait, the Smash Brothers documentary? The Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, wow. yeah, it took me a while, but yeah, dang, that is a long documentary.
I'm not sure how new or old it is, but I only saw it quite recently.
I think it came out 2 or 3 years ago, I believe. I don't quote me on that, but no, just what goes into preparation in these tournaments and how even those players say that they're one of those few that kind of, I wouldn't say keep the game alive, they just bring another subculture to the title, just the competitive gaming aspect of it. And I think that's what Melee, I mean, what originally was just a party game, I mean, it's still technically a party game to be exact, what Smash Brothers is, but after once Melee came out, it just, you know, exploded onto the scene for, like, competitions, and, you know, that's where we always, anytime I want to play with groups of friends and some hardcore Smash players, doesn't matter if we want to play Hyrule Castle or anything, it's like, no, we got to play Final Destination, I'm sorry, I'm like... We're not in a competition. I know you like that. It's frustrating. I mean, I'm a competitive Smash Brothers player myself, but not up to the level what these guys are going to be. I mean, it's just... It's amazing how, like, you know, since Melee's been out for, geez, more than 13 years, it's still going strong on, like, you know, independent, like, you know, competitions.
Yeah, no, it is really quite incredible to see that kind of almost, you know, that professional fighter level of the game, which you might not even be aware of, and there's like all these techniques, or at least to me, a lot of them which I was oblivious to, and just seeing the different ways they can kind of take advantage of the mechanics in the game is really quite fascinating, and it's just a really good watch as well. And it's just knowing that Nintendo is aware of that culture, and more than that, they're kind of going out, you know, reaching out to these players and getting them involved. I think that's a fantastic move. It really is making me excited to watch this. And one of the other things they announced is there's the character lineup. And so it's not going to be the full character list that we're aware of, which is currently being revealed. There's going to be a 20 character list. And what's even more interesting, and it should really kind of stir up the some of the participants here, is they're basically going to be drawing numbers out of a hat, as it were, to choose their character. And so they're all going to be kind of, you know, numbered from, there's the 16 of them, so 1 to 16, and then in order, they're going to be, you know, choosing their character until, you know, whoever's left, well, no one's going to be left the last one, but they cannot have the same character as each other. And so they're not going to have all these Fox players or, you know, all these other types of tactics.
That's interesting how they're doing that. I mean, I can understand some pros there are going to be upset with that, but I think that's just the way it's how things go with that. I mean, just, you can't, like, I think that's a way of evening the playing field like that. Like, we're trying to show you, okay, we know you, we've seen your skills both in tournaments and in documentary form. We're going to put you in here and see how you feel with, put your skills to test with just a random character.
Yeah, and I think it'll make for some really cool matches as well. Because we might get some, like, just character mashups, which we don't normally get on this type of scene. So, yeah, it'd be cool to see how all those characters are exploited. And especially some of the new characters as well, because there are some new characters in this list. You know, I'm not sure how much time beforehand, if they do, you know, if they are, can they get it to work out how to play with them or not, compared to some of the characters which haven't really changed much.
I wonder what the winner will get as far as a prize.
That's a good question. I'm not sure, yeah, what they've said about an actual reward.
I mean, one obvious guess would be like, oh, you get a free copy of the game once it releases. Maybe the both versions, the 3DS and Wii U version, that'd be nice, but
I think it'd be a bit more than that, wouldn't it?
Watch it be like, okay, you've won. What character do you want in Smash for the next Smash Brothers? And I can see that guy just like to make everyone mad, like all the pros mad, and he brings back Meta Knight.
Oh dear.
But if any of you pros are listening to this podcast right now and they do give you the option to bring a character in, there is a certain winged protagonist in a sci-fi series that I really would like to make
protagonist?
Antagonist, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Antagonist. He's a protagonist in my heart because I love the character. there's a certain winged character, winged dragon-like character in a sci-fi series that stars a female protagonist that I'd really like to see in the Smash Brothers lineup.
I've never played Birdo's in game, actually. So yeah, and coming off the back of all this was the announcement of a new accessory for the Wii U, and which is going to help the participants play in the tournament, which is a GameCube controller adapter. It's going to be this little block you plug up to the two USBs at, I guess, either the front or back of the Wii U console, and then lets you plug in four GameCube controllers. Now, they haven't gone into any written details, so we can't confirm if you can use WaveBirds, but I would think it's a fairly safe bet that you can.
I would prefer to use WaveBirds because the return of corded controllers is just going to be chaos in my apartment.
Yeah, but I do feel that's kind of the reason they're bringing this out. It's for the type of players who are entering this tournament, I reckon, and they want a wired option. Because technically there isn't one for the Wii U. The only controllers you can use are all wireless. And I believe it comes up in the Smash Brothers documentary about how they all use the wired controllers because they don't want any of the latency that you can get with wireless controllers. Not that it has ever affected my experience with the game.
I think, wasn't it because they didn't want wireless ones because of be it the Wi-Fi that's in the air, like, you know, in these conventions and all the cell phones, that it would just mess with the signal?
Oh, no, I think it's a more of a kind of a tournament scene type thing. They are generally concerned about the latency between the wireless controller and the console, that it may drop between a particular frame of animation.
You're right. Because, like, the fact that using something that's not just wired, you get something, you get as far as a move, like whatever, if you're performing a move, whatever, you feel like if it comes sooner, whereas wired, you feel like there could be problems.
Exactly, it's such a small amount of it, but technically the latency does exist. And so for those players that are really at that level and do literally count frames in terms of when's best to attack and to react to characters. They want that wide option, which is what this adapter will give them. But for everyone else, it will also give them the, you know, the familiarity of the GameCube controller, if they've got some of them laying around.
Which I do find, and I know people will not agree with me, is I think the GameCube controller was Nintendo's best controller that they ever put out. I mean, there's...
It was a fine controller.
I mean, the things I didn't like about it were the extra small D-pad, and I don't know, I mean, even though the yellow camera stick worked well for, like, first-person shooters that I went and played on there, it just, I don't know, it just feels like it would be a lot better if it had that extra analog.
I think overall, it is one of their better controllers, and it just seems a really perfect fit for Smash. But I'm quite intrigued just to see how well the Pro Controller and just the gamepad itself works for Smash. Because, I mean, they're just quite traditional controllers. And in theory, you know, on paper, that's all Smash really needs. You know, it needs just good buttons, good sticks. And as long as you've got enough of them, you've got a good controller for Smash, as long as it's comfortable. So I think the Pro Controller should work really well for this. So I'm hoping, you know, as long as it does, I don't feel I'll personally need this adapter.
I applaud this because it gives options, and you know, it awards the pros. And by the way, I did hear some negativity from fans that were just, well, not Smash Bros. Pros, but that they felt like that community was whining so much that they wanted the GameCube controller support, that they felt like that was almost not going to happen because the GameCube ports were not on a Wii U as opposed to the original Wii. But my response to that is, like, why should you care? It's an extra option. You can still play with the Pro or a game, or the Wiimote and a Nunchuck or the gamepad. I'm glad that the support's here, because that's what I feel like I control best with that GameCube controller when I have a Melee or even on Brawl. But it gives me the opportunity not to go out and buy extra controllers for my... I'm going to buy extra controllers, whatever, in the near future for Mario Kart, but just, if it came out, it's like, hey, you know, do you have a GameCube controller lying around? Plug it in, bam.
Yeah, definitely. So how about yourself, Holly? Is this adapter something which interests you? Do you have, like, GameCube controllers laying around, which, you know, could be utilized?
Well, I personally own one GameCube controller, and that's it. I mean, I didn't have a lot of money. I was fairly young during my big GameCube craze, and so I didn't have a whole lot of money to buy controllers, so one day I just was like, I need a new GameCube controller, and I need a good one. And my brother was like, I agree, I need to get one too. And so we both just bought a GameCube controller, and his, I believe, is, well, the control stick got weird, although our friend fixed it.
Yeah, they can't do that.
I'm not sure where that one is, though, but I do have one that I own myself. My brother got a white one, like, maybe a year and a half ago or so. And that's actually a pretty cool color for a GameCube controller. But, yeah, we've got those. I'm not sure if I will spend the extra money to get the adapter, though. I mean, I have two Pro controllers. I have the gamepad, obviously. And, obviously, I have a couple of Classic controllers as well. And so I think that'll be just fine for my needs.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a similar setup. Swapping one of the Pros for just another Classic. But yeah, I feel that's going to be more than adequate for a Smash multiplayer. In fact, I think a nice rule could advise that if one of my friends, you know, wants to play the GameCube controller so much, they should bring a GameCube adapter to plug it up.
Yeah, you buy it and then bring it. I'm not going to waste my money if I don't need it.
Yeah. And yeah, and that wraps up the Nintendo New Smash Edition.
One thing I feel like for this adapter... Do you feel like they're going to bundle this with the Wii U Smash Brothers, or do you feel like this is just... Well, I think it would be best to bundle it.
I think what they could do is have, like a collector's edition version where they bundle in that and, like, a soundtrack as well, and then put a slight premium on there.
Yeah, that could work.
Like, fancy packaging, like a bit of a fan service type thing.
Yeah, and that, or I'm just trying to think, how much this thing's going to cost? Maybe $20 here in the States?
Yeah, I can't say it being too much. It's, you know, it's just an adapter, as it were. Unless, of course, it comes with that controller we saw. Because the GameCube controller, which was on the little video, instead of saying GameCube on there, it just has the Smash Bros. Emblem.
I would buy that.
So it's possibly they would sell those either in addition or with it. Yeah, I could see people buying them as well. Especially just to have a new GameCube controller, because if I was to dig mine out, most of them, the sticks have gone a bit funky. Like, you know, the rubber around them and so on. And so I imagine other people's have as well, maybe.
I'm still trying to figure out where mine are in my parents' house.
Yeah, actually, yeah, before we do move on then, do we think there's, like, further applications for this down the road? Is this a sign that they might be doing, like, you know, GameCube Virtual Console, and this give this as a controller option, or, like, some more GameCube HD remakes, and they'll put the controller support like they did with Pikmin 3? Add a new controller option to Wind Waker, and let you play with a GameCube controller as well.
I think this is just a sign that we're going to be getting news on GameCube virtual console like release dates probably by E3, and I think that's just going to offer up another option to, well, I don't know. So I'm trying to think, whatever, if you have the option on there, where would you actually press as far as button wise? Well, to activate, actually, you know, I'm sure they would find a well, button wise to enter, save state, yeah, sorry, I had a brain fart there for so long. But no, restore points, that's what they're called.
Well, knowing Nintendo, they'll just make you use the gamepad for that. Still. You just have to have it on your side.
No, I think they could probably do that, but a friend of mine suggested this, is like, where do you actually see probably, I don't know, like, this is a wacky concept. It's like, you know, you see people come back on board with the Wii U just to use those GameCube controllers again. I'm just like, no. I don't see them going through another hoop to use a GameCube controller to help develop their titles because they're upset with the control scheme of the gamepad.
Yeah. Actually, what we're going in a kind of a weird tangent now, but what if an announcement at E3 was a special Smash Bros. Edition Wii U, which had brought the GameCube ports back into the system? And on the original Wii, they have a new edition of the Wii U which has GameCube ports built into the system.
And
just has a big Smash Bros. Emblem on the face of it.
Oh, man. Maybe? I don't know.
It could be crazy enough to do that and just have the game, you know, pre-installed on the system. And include one of the new Smash Bros. GameCube controllers. Mm. You never know. They got lots of options to play around with.
There's plenty out there. Hmm.
Yeah. And talking about E3, we now move on to our best and worst E3 moments. Brought to you from Nintendo. Obviously, Nintendo have, you know, some of the best E3 moments in general, but they do also have quite a few showings which went a bit pear-shaped.
Not just pear-shaped, the moments where you're just, you're asking yourself what's going on, and, I mean, Nintendo, one of the Nintendo shows was responsible for the Reaction Guys meme, which the guys from IGN put out, whatever, for, So, you can thank Nintendo for that.
Yeah, and I believe they have also officially apologized for at least one of their E3 showings. So, either best or worst, what initially comes to mind?
If I had to say best, I'm not trying to say best reveal or anything like that as far as the E3. I mean, I'll get to that in a bit, but I'm talking like as far as best overall.
Yeah, best moments sort of thing.
Well, best overall show I think that they did have was the 2002 show. Mainly because the GameCube was just about 6-7 months out. Game Boy Advance was out for an entire year. And I think that was like one of the last few times I saw that both, you know, both of Nintendo's, you know, hardware, like, both their chief profit, like, chief items of hardware, they got equal showing as far as games and even third-party support out there. I mean, probably for the GameCube, though, it's like you had the big three out there, which was Metroid Prime, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, and Super Mario Sunshine. And to top that off, they actually had, what else did they have? Well, yeah, they just had those three out, and both got rousing, like, you know, like, well, not rousing, but got quite a bit of praise, especially there. I mean, that was one of the, especially that E3 was what proved people that Metroid actually kind of, what they played there did wow, this actually does work in 3D and work in a first-person perspective. And then the Game Boy Advance side, I mean, we had plenty of things like the Golden Sun, Metroid Fusion, Fire Emblem. It was a good time to be a fan of both those, that handheld and that console. But when you get to the best, as far as a worst showing, this is the sad part. There's plenty to pick from, and you know, I can say the same thing from other competitors. For instance,
Microsoft just had a pretty rough year previously, didn't they?
Oh, well, if I still go by, well, I mean, I'll get to this a little bit later, but the worst one I think Nintendo ever put out was the one in, I think it was 2008, yeah, because after the Wii U's release and after it just, went out of the gate just flying, just all on flames, Nintendo had a habit of, dedicating about a third of their show just going through slides, sales slides, just showing how well they've been doing financially. And, it's kind of odd looking at it now, right now. I would actually gladly take those, take those slides to tell me everything's okay, but, that's a while away. But no, 2008, it was just, I think there was it was the second straight year that they kept showing off slides of how well the Wii was selling and how well DS was. And at that time, you're just thinking, get to the games. We understand you're doing well. We know you're making a lot of money. But it's like, oh, here are the games, but it's stuff you're not going to play. Which, I mean, it was a dedication to casual titles. You had Wii Fit, or that might have been 2007 they showed that. But no, 2008, I believe, was the year we had Wii Music.
Yeah, and we had, what was it? We had Ravi Drums.
The reason I put that above the Pac-Man versus, not the, the Pac-Man versus connectivity thing from 2003 above is just because, like I said, that one gave us the Reaction Guys meme, so I was happy for that. But this one gave us a lot of negative memes. Not to say the Reaction Guys one is a negative one. I mean, it is when you put it in perspective, but that one is one of my favorite memes. Whereas when you get the Wii Music, it's just, this is not meant for positive or joke, this is all bad. All bad. When you see Miyamoto and random people playing flutes and air guitaring with Wiimotes and nunchucks, I think that it was at that point as a Wii owner, I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, things have gone wrong right now. Where's the company I knew and love?
Yeah, and I think on that example, it didn't really help that ultimately Wii Music didn't turn out to be a great game. But even if it was, it's not a game which particularly lends itself well to be shown off on a giant stage. No matter how good it is, it just looks a bit silly when the people are up there just kind of waving around Wii remotes while not much is really happening in the background, and then you've got Miis standing around playing instruments behind
him. Yeah, and you're playing the worst version of the Mario Brothers theme you could probably think of.
Yeah, and it was, I remember it was all kind of out of sync, and it just was dreadful.
And, I think Guitar Hero was big at the time, and so, if you compare that to Guitar Hero, with Guitar Hero, at least you're, holding a little plastic guitar or sitting at a set of plastic drums, but this was just,
it was pantomime. It was pantomime. That's all it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at least in Guitar Hero. And it was embarrassing. Oh, sorry, carry on.
No, it's all right. Go ahead. I just said it's embarrassing.
At least in things like Guitar Hero, at least what they're showing on the screen looks exciting. Because you've got these rock stars and so on with actual guitars on the, on the video, and they're all rocking out, and there's this big crowd all, cheering and going wild. But yeah, just Wii Music is just four Miis standing in a field. Be like being really dead straight and just kind of playing this instrument, not really moving much.
Well, I'm trying to think, what was the other games they announced for that? Because I think in a sea of really bad moments of that E3 showing, it's so bad I don't even remember the good that they announced from that.
But now saying, I think it was such a big focus on things like Wii Music.
I'm still trying to think right now. I'm going back in my head. It's like, was that 2008 or 2007 they showed that?
Well, I think they initially showed music on 2007, but they also showed it again in 2008, and I think they had a bigger focus of it then because it was coming out obviously sooner.
It was 2008. Yep, it was.
But yeah, I feel we should move on now from Wii Music. I think it's bringing us down a bit.
Well, no, yeah, it's bringing us down, and I think it's bringing down my my vibes at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a cliched one here, for one of the good ones, which was the year we first saw Reggie, and he comes out with the infamous quote, you know, my name is Reggie, I'm about kicking ass, I'm about taking names, and we're about making games, which is... Which is a crazy line just to come out with.
They were throwing punches. They were at that E3.
I guess he was what, something like a marketing executive at the time? Or something in that vein?
He was, yeah. I think they had brought him over from... Because I remember Reggie first got his start, whatever, as a marketing executive with Pizza Hut. And he then moved on to VH1. And then they brought him over from that.
Yeah, but kind of beyond just his ballsiness on stage... he also revealed the DS for the first time and pulled that out of his pocket. And the DS actually had a really good kind of initial like demonstration. And one of the first games they showed was Metroid Prime Hunters, which kind of, despite what your experience might have been with the game afterwards, it demoed fantastically. Because it looked like Metroid Prime, essentially, on the big screen. And he was showing off how you can, you know, you can use the stylus on the touchscreen, you know, for, you know, really precise controls. And he was showing you how you can essentially have a game like Prime, even though it's not really Prime. But, like, graphically, you can have something similar on your portable. And, you know, showing the advantage of the two screens, because you had, like, a radar on one, and you had your, you know, you're moving around on the other. And then they jumped to things like the remake of Mario 64, and they had a whole bunch of other demos. And, yeah, I mean... It just was kind of like Nintendo in their element, really. Just being a bit cocky and having some really cool games to back them up and new systems as well, which also really helps.
And it was the birth of the Reginator.
Yeah, that's a bit of a turnaround, isn't it?
That one was a particular... I mean, the one I mentioned, it was just... Mainly, I was just going for games, not as far as performance. But yeah, that one does come to mind, because I remember watching that and, when was I was watching that? I was in my formatting class in high school, and, you know, I got everything done at work, and I was in the back corner. I always chose the computer in the back corner because nobody would look back there, and I was streaming it while in the middle of class, and I just kept saying to myself, like, who is this guy? And, like, comes out, and he says that line. I'm like, did I just hear this right? Nintendo's actually swearing during their pro... Yes, go on, please.
It definitely grabs your attention, doesn't it?
Oh, no, it wasn't until, well... the big reveal at the end that almost got me kicked out of that class.
I think you have to remind me, what was the big reveal on that show at the end?
That one? That was... The 04 one with Reggie was the same year with the Twilight Princess reveal.
Of course it was, yeah. So yeah, it got better and better, actually. Yeah, they finished with the Twilight Princess reveal.
Yeah, and I
remember... After announcing the DS.
If you want a good crowd reaction, look up that crowd reaction from that E3. Right as soon as Link's face shows up in that trailer, I think I can faintly hear people crying in just enjoyment just of seeing that.
I know exactly what you mean. No, I've heard that as well. But yeah, I think that comes off the back of what was a really bad Zelda reveal. Obviously, more than a couple of years before that one. And I think that was why they were so excited when they saw kind of this like more mature version of Link, right? You know, riding upon Epona over the sunset, with his sword in sight,
playing to the Conan by the Barbarian theme as well.
Oh, of course, yeah. Because how Zelda was revealed last time was for Wind Waker, which, although we know it's a fantastic game, its initial reveal wasn't so great. It didn't have any of the, you know, the sailing or, you know, about the sea or the boat. It was oddly a bit dark in a sense. It was all footage of in a dungeon, and so I don't think it best kind of showed, you know, the cartoon style in its best element. You know, Link didn't look quite right. I mean, beyond the shock of him being, really small proportions, he looked quite different than he did in when the final game turned out. And they really played up the kind of the cartoon animations of it, Because I know that there's a scene where, like, he's running away from the Moblins, and then he jumps on this chandelier, and they kind of, like, run over, over, like, the cliff or the edge, as it were. And they, like, they stand there for a moment, like a Disney cartoon. And they, like, look down, and they see themselves, they're not on the floor. And they kind of look up, and they, like, try and run on midair. And then they kind of fall down. It's like, what? And that just, like, took everyone in shock. It's like, this isn't Zelda, what's this? And then, like, it ends with kind of Link kind of, like, swinging on the chandelier. And he gives his, like, dodgy little wink to the camera.
Oh, yeah, that one, when I first saw those images, though, I went on my 56K modem back when the land of broadband internet did not exist in my house. The first look at that was just I was confounded, and I was kind of betrayed, almost, because, you know, we had seen about a year ago a great tech demo in the form of, like, in the style of, like, the Ocarina of Time models running on GameCube hardware, and at that, you're just like, this is going to be great, and then it just, like, it was a bait-and-switch kind of an idea. It's like, oh, yeah, we're going with this. It's just, it was terrible, and I'm trying to think, was this at Space World they announced this, or was this in E3?
The Wind Waker reveal? Oh, yeah. What, you mean the CG?
The CG Ocarina of Time one was at,
I think that was a Space World one, wasn't it?
I think that was a Space World. I think both these were at Space World, but again, we'll consider.
Nah, I think the Wind Waker one was definitely an E3 one.
Yeah, you're right. You are correct.
Yeah, because you kind of got the audience reactions as well, but it's definitely not as audible as the Twilight Princess one later on. It's just noticeable that you don't hear the audience, as it were, even though it's shot from the audience. It's just stunned in silence.
Well, this brings me back to a point. I'm like, there are two moments in announcements that, that I feel like that just this announcement, but in hindsight, it turned out well. Same thing with this one. It's like when Sony, I think in 2006, when they initially announced the price of the PS3, when I forgot who was on stage, whatever that just and I, names escaping me, but when they went on stage and nothing was really shown. Kind of, I mean, it all looked pre-rendered, as far as, like, that whole, way of fooling everybody, like, oh, these are how visuals are, but it's like, no, that's not real time, but I digress. When they announced the price of the PS3, which turned into a meme itself, was, like, $599, I never heard air escape a room so quickly like that. And that was the same thing when I rewatched it, like, years later, that video for the Wind Waker reveal, just excitement, and then it's like, whew, gone, that. And whereas with the PS3 price reveal, everybody's just sitting there just talking to each other, like, are they serious about pricing it this way? And then with the Zelda reveal, everybody was just like just trying to just convince themselves what they saw was a joke. But, you know, I mean, again, both those things, it turned out well for both products, to be exact, but it just, those are my favorite moments to get a laugh out of some people, just to see reactions when it's just in a negative light.
So how about yourself, Holly? Any favorite or worst kind of Nintendo showings for you during E3?
I think you mentioned all the worst ones, basically. But one that I want to give, like, a special mention is, I believe it was 2011, the live orchestra kickoff that celebrated the 25th anniversary of Zelda, and, like, the video going along with that, man, that just sent shivers down my spine. And I feel like I haven't been watching E3 as long as you guys, so I feel like I've missed out on a lot of these moments, but ever since I started watching E3, whenever that was, that has been my favorite moment so far, is just that kickoff for that.
Yeah, oh, no, that's a good one. And I think that's one people will go to the argument for when as far as an example, when people are upset that Nintendo's not doing a traditional press conference, is because you don't get those moments like that again, or those crowd reactions. But then, I mean, I could care about less about crowd reactions. It's just getting moments like that to open up a show, or just, I don't know, it's spectacle. That's one thing I liked about it.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna start missing out on it. I already feel like we're missing out now that Nintendo has seemingly shifted permanently to not doing a live press conference. Because, you know, you think about all these previous moments from press conference, you know, from live press conferences, and I'm already feeling almost nostalgic for them because I feel like we're not going to see them anymore from Nintendo. Last year was the first time they did a Nintendo Direct, just a video for E3, right?
Yes.
Possibly the last as well.
Yeah. Because
they're technically not doing a Direct. They've made an odd distinction that it's not a Direct this time.
Yeah. Well, it's still just a video.
It is, yes.
Well, I can't think of anything from last year that actually was a really memorable moment because it was just all in video. The memorable moments come from the live press conferences.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
But I think there may be a middle ground here, and I'm hoping, and it might just be being an optimist here, I'm hoping that's why they have made a distinction and said, nah, we're not doing a Nintendo Direct this year. We tried that last year. We don't think it worked. We're going to try something else. And I'm hoping they're going to try and add a bit of spectacle in it. It's not going to be live, but in theory, I don't think it needs to be, because for most of us, we're all watching it at the same time on the internet.
I think it is going to be live. I mean, it's just not in a theater. I think they're only inviting a few few journalists and fans to kind of view the. That's I think.
Oh, they've got live things around it, but I think the equivalent of the show.
The digital event.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a pre-recorded thing, but they also afterwards then have live events from the guys at the Treehouse demoing games, which have been announced and revealed and so on. But yeah, I'm hoping, because it's not direct, they are going to, you know, mix things up a bit, ramp up the production value, make it funny, make it memorable, you know, give us some moments, give us some memes and some catchphrases and the rest. But yeah, just kind of work the audience and, make those announcements count. Don't just give us, trailers and then what are talking about it and then some more trailers. Yeah, make it a show, make it memorable. And I hope they go in that direction.
There's a lot of good and bad when it comes to Nintendo out there. I was watching something on game trailers. They were discussing, the worst E3 moments. And shockingly, and this was, they placed the Wind Waker, not the initial reveal, or wait, yeah, it was the initial reveal of Skyward Sword, where they had problems on stage trying to get it work. They rated that number one on worst E3 moments, and I said to myself, I mean, it's bad, but is it really?
I don't know. I remember seeing it live, and I felt so bad just for them at the time, because I was really built up for it as well, and it didn't work. It looked rubbish, and it was Zelda. You don't want it to be rubbish.
Oh, no, you don't. I felt like looking on that list is like, wait, you put, Wii Music was number 8 on that. I'm like, you're telling me that is worse than that?
I don't know, I could almost agree. You just had, Miyamoto on the stage trying to work with this demo, which was just broken for whatever reason. But he was doing one thing and Link's arms were kind of flailing around doing something else. It was just embarrassing. And he's the guy who's created Zelda and Mario and all these other awesome things.
You expect this AAA this is probably one of the top 5 most memorable franchises in the world, the video game industry, to, work right. I think my point being is that there were a lot of embarrassing stuff. I mean, I don't know, it just felt, I mean, yeah, did it belong in the top 10? Yeah, it did, but number one, not necessarily. I felt like the PS3 price reveal, which had, the PS3 price reveal, the 2009, or I think it was 2010 Ubisoft conference where it had Mr. Caffeine, which was the most laughable thing I could probably think of.
And I think I still prefer him to his female counterpart now.
Aisha Tyler?
She done the last 2 years, I think, hasn't she?
Yeah, Aisha Tyler was on the last 2 years. But, and I'm getting into as far as bad ones from not just Nintendo. I'm just saying, not only has Nintendo made bad ones, all three of these companies have made some, and even major publishers have made some bad decisions on there. I mean, I think when I look at Sony, they've jumped up pretty well as far as when it comes to, a bad showing in 2006, which I felt like was the be-all, end-all bad E3 press showings. And since then, they've done pretty well for themselves. Whereas Microsoft, it's always hit or miss. And the reason I say that is it's just a lot of the stuff you see is that there's not a lot of surprises. But the worst one out of Microsoft I really thought was the initial Kinect reveal, because it took the full stage. I can understand that. You know, it's like this new peripheral you want to show off, and since motion gaming was at height. But it was the same thing that happened with, like, what was it, with Skyward Sword. It didn't work on stage.
Yeah, and I guess that's always, or it can be the trouble when you are doing things live. And I guess that's one of the elements that Nintendo's trying to avoid when they're going with their pre-recorded shows. Yeah, again, it's an odd decision. I think we would, you know, kind of all really, you know, just quite like them, just, you know, to do the show live, just put huge production value into, you know, really put on a show and, you know, just, you know, show off the best that they can be.
One thing I want to say, and this is just really quick, what they say, what was the biggest surprise out of all Nintendo's E3 announcements that just caught you off guard?
That's a real tricky one. Possibly Iwata pulling the Wii out of his jacket pocket when it was still called the Revolution.
That was a good one. What about you, Holly? I mean, I know you haven't seen a lot of E3s, but...
Well, Lewis, talking about his briefly, should have given me enough time to think of something, but honestly, I cannot think of anything. I guess, I mean, I already mentioned the orchestra, but I didn't see that coming, and it was fantastic, but I just did not expect it, see it coming, or... You know?
Oh yeah, they said they were going to do something for the 25th anniversary. You just never expected that to happen there.
An orchestra just to pop up on stage as it was.
I don't know, an orchestra always pops up in Nintendo half the time, but that's just a whole different story. But no, mine, and I'm just saying it real quick, was it was in 2009, the Metroid Other M reveal. The last game that they had shown, because I think that was the same year we got the vitality sensor, and that was the same year we kept getting the slides of all the sales data, and the whole time I was thinking, like, okay, Super Mario Galaxy 2 was the only thing I did not expect, but it was, you know, best-selling platform, last game was a bestseller, made sense to make a sequel. This one, just Team Ninja doing this in, wow, Samus with a voice. I mean, in hindsight, you can look back at the game, a lot of things didn't pan out, and some people either hate this game or they just enjoy it. I'm in that middle ground. But that one, I not since the Twilight Princess reveal, that was like the last time my jaw was dropped, because nobody saw that coming. There was like, because like that, when I define a surprise, it's like something that's not leaked, like days before, because I think there was a Twilight Princess like leak before, days before that, but this one... This was, like, heavily guarded.
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I think we will wrap up this segment now. And I'd just like to say that I think if we're staying positive, in theory, this could be the best Nintendo kind of use of their kind of presence at E3, as odd as that may sound. Because they do have the Nokia Theater, which they usually use for their big stage show. But they're doing that. They're using that for the obviously the Smash Bros. Invitational, which will be live, and it's going to be going on for 2.5 hours. And they've worked really really cleverly to bring in the really key players within the kind of the Smash Bros. Community. And I think that 2.5 hours show is going to be incredible to watch. I reckon it's going to have some really awesome highs, and I think it's just going to be exhilarating right to the end to watch that. And I think if they plan it right as well, pre-recorded Nintendo Direct could just be, you know, not so much jam-packed with, you know, the perfect content, but they could put, you know, they could display it in a way, just really kind of build one off each other and just, you know, play around with it until they get the thing perfect beforehand. And just, you know, push it out there on the day. And lining up the right content, and they say they're going to, you know, they're going to have some, you know, live stuff going throughout the, you know, duration of E3 for the Treehouse guys and so on. I think if they line everything up right, this could be one of the better E3s we see from Nintendo, even though they've shaken everything up, and on the face of it, it's looking like something we don't necessarily want. I reckon this could turn out to be pretty good. And just this latest news about what they're doing with Smash, and it just seems like they finally get it. just getting these key players in. They know the audience. They know who is going to be watching this show, who's going to be like spreading this information across the internet, and who's going to be really getting excited for this stuff. So yeah, I'm really excited for this year's E3.
I'm not holding out too much hope, just because.
Oh no.
I get excited year after year, and then I'm just left with like
disappointment. But this is the one, Harrison. This is the one.
This is the one. I know, but I guess it's just. We'll see. I mean, I'm going in with low expectations for the digital event. That's what I'll say.
Nickens. Before we close up the show here, how do you feel, Holly, about how this show is going to go down? Do you think it's going to be one of the better ones, or one of the not so good ones to go along with our theme here?
Well, I'm definitely more optimistic, but I'm not quite as optimistic as you, Lewis. I am still kind of doubtful. I don't know that it will blow my mind, but at the same time, I mean, Nintendo can't be, like, blind to the fact that they're not impressing people and that the last couple of E3s have not impressed people. And so they have to know that they're doing something wrong. They have been doing something wrong. And so, yeah, I think that there's a very good chance that they have decided to change their strategy and that this will actually be a very, very good E3.
Would old Nintendo put on a really awesome Smash Bros. Tournament though? I don't think they would have.
I mean,
I think they've learned a few important lessons along the road.
Especially when they pulled
Melee out previously, didn't they?
The Evo tournament.
From Evo, and they obviously changed their mind last minute and allowed it. But yeah, I think Nintendo has kind of evolved very quickly since then, because that was that last year?
That was last year.
Yeah, and so to have this big turnaround here, yeah, I think Nintendo's learned quite a lot, and yeah, as you are all aware now.
I mean, I'm
very much looking forward to this.
I mean, I'm excited for the Smash Bros. Tournament. It's just the digital event. I just have this feeling that we're gonna get very few surprises or things. Right. I don't know. It's one I feel like, you know. Yes, these games are gonna play, but I feel like they really need to hit a home run to actually get new consumers.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's definitely a gamble, and we shall see how well we all did on our predictions, which we all made on last week's show. And so we'll go over them again once E3 has all been said and done, and we'll find out who was best at predicting those E3 surprises. As always, you can send your questions and comments to us to contact@infendo.com. And if you're listening to this on the website itself, of course you can just scroll down and enter your questions and comments in the comment box below. This has been Infendo Radio, episode 313. Thank you very much for listening.
See you later, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
See you later.